Hello, welcome to this episode of My Fermented Life. Thanks for joining us as we document the journey of an entrepreneur and his family as they pursue their dreams of building a food and beverage brand. Follow along as we discuss events, lessons, and meet some really cool people along the way. Now, this week's episode is brought to you by Madge's Food, making fermented food and beverages tastier and healthier, 1 billion microbes at a time. And now, the king of kimchi, the baron of Bloody Mary, and the Maharaji of micheladas, your host, Michael Miller. Hello, hello. This is Mike Miller, and welcome back to another episode of My Fermented Life. Today is August 3rd, and today we're actually recording this from a remote location. We are a guest today at the home of somebody I truly admire, and he's actually the topic of our episode today. So this is really cool. So we're definitely stepping up on the production game from behind the car to the back porch. Now we're going remote. So we're definitely increasing our production value here on this crazy podcast. So today, let me talk to you about our special guest today. His name is Michael Grimes, or Mike Grimes, we like to call him, or me, myself, and I, because he's another Mike. I'll explain to that some other time. But he is one of the founders of Southern Grit, which kind of interesting story, was a food CPG company, and then now is doing some amazing things in the culinary scene, and I'll let him explain to that. So I want you guys all to welcome Mike Grimes.
Thank you so much for having me out. I am honored, and it is a privilege to be on this podcast. I am a subscriber on Spotify, and I just truly believe in this podcast, and it's fun to do this with you, Mike. So thank you.
It goes out to me, man. You're somebody I've got to know. Mike is more than just a fellow foodpreneur. He's become a friend, more than just another, you know, kind of colleague that are chasing a similar dream. Somebody that definitely I look up to with his PMA, probably one of the best person I know with the greatest amount of positive mental attitude. It's almost like sickening. He can be so positive. So it's amazing, but yeah. So just welcome today. So since people don't know you, can you just give us a real quick description? Tell us your story a little bit.
Sure. In relation to food or life in general?
Yeah. Just give us a basic story. What kind of, where you came from? Give us your background.
Well, I came from all over the place. So actually all three of my siblings, we were all born in different states, and we lived in 7 different states and 14 different cities. So kind of a little bit of our journey has been all over this lower 48. But what has brought me in relation to Texas was actually coming and working in the audio visuals field. I've always been obsessed with the arts of some sort, whether it's musical art, visual art, or culinary arts now at this point in my life. But I've always loved taking raw potential through an idea and making it materialize and creating it and not finding boundaries or putting limitations on what our imagination is. I've always encouraged my son to just dive into his imagination. And if you believe it, I truly believe in some shape or form, you can make it happen. So we dove into this business with the intention of creating a product line. The main purpose of that was, after my son was born, we wanted to get away from restaurants and create a little bit more family time. And a little did we know that the amount of time and effort that you have to put into branding and getting a product out to the public.
So let's backtrack. Let's not get ahead of ourselves, because I'm fascinated by that. But I don't think a lot of these people know you about your food experience. So, well, can you kind of tell people what got you into the food industry in the first place? Because, I mean, obviously you haven't always done food, but so what was the motivation to get in food? What got you going from you know, rocking and rolling to now food?
Honestly, what I used used to be a chore in our household, ended up using those skills to actually score a date with my wife. So that was actually the main thing that kind of jumped us into the culinary realm.
They always say a woman loves a man that can cook.
Absolutely. So both my parents had to go out into the workplace. And so one thing that my mom wanted to instill in all three of her kids was a good foundation with culinary, learning how to cook eggs, make French toast, cook a noodle properly, and just simple things. Know how to cook rice, grill off some ham, cook a chicken breast, make a casserole. All of that was something that was instilled to all three of her children. And we're actually all really good cooks. I just kind of ran wild with it. But what really got me into pursuing food as a professional career was my wife's encouragement. I actually did tell her at a party once that I was actually a really good cook, and she wanted me to put my money where my mouth was. And actually what our first date was making her a vegan black bean chili in her apartment.
Oh, so, wow.
From that, she just every meal and get together, I was producing food and cooking and wanting to upstage the last, performance that I had before. And, she said, you know, the pure joy that she saw in the kitchen was something that I should translate into my everyday life.
Now, you know, you are a professionally trained chef too, aren't you?
Yeah. I went through culinary school. I went through St. Phillips, but I'd have to say the majority of my education came from individuals that hadn't even stepped foot in a culinary program.
Absolutely.
It's just that life lessons and life training and skill sets that you pick up on the job were probably the most beneficial.
Now, would any of us, I mean, tell us about some of the culinary experience you had working with different restaurants. I know you were exposed to, different sets of restaurants and experiences.
First restaurant I got my feet wet in actually was at a deli, WD Deli off of Broadway. And Mike and Wayne really let me just run wild with my imagination and do all their private catering for their restaurant. So I got to test out recipes and kind of see what kind of cuisine I wanted to work with. And then, you know, dabbling in making sandwiches and soups and salads and just your basic fundamentals. And from there, I was introduced actually to Bruce Auden down at Vigo on the Banks through Chef Martin, who was one of my culinary school instructors. And he just kind of had me walk through the kitchen and just wanted to see what I wanted to do and wanted to accomplish in this industry, and offered me a job on the spot. And so I made a quick segue from WD Deli over to actually Auden's Kitchen before he moved me down to Vigo on the Banks, where I just got to design daily pizza specials and burger specials and make a sandwich and make a vegetarian plate. And so I actually took joy in creating all of those daily items. And what a lot of people thought was too hectic to constantly be doing that, I took pride in my work and, you know, just really wanted to push myself and see whatever I could do.
Now, I hear the rumor you make a pretty good barbecue. So did you spend some time doing barbecue?
Absolutely, yeah. So when I left Vigo on the Banks, I worked as a volunteer in the food bank to see if I wanted to get into education, and worked in their Second Chance program, which is with future parolees from the Dominguez unit, all nonviolent offenders, a lot of them in the drug offense realm of sorts. And I taught them for 18 weeks and got them through that program and had a lot of fun with it, but then really missed the competitive nature of being on the line and didn't really enjoy the desk portion. It was a lot of 70% at a desk and only 30% really hands-on with food. So got hired on at the granary actually as a prep cook because I thought I was going to make a food truck at that point. But then just started excelling and went from prep cook all the way to sous chef. Quite quickly, and ended up doing a lot of the Meatopias, did the barbecue circuit, and was actually over in London barbecuing the day before my son was born, and just became obsessed with the barbecue culture and working with live fire. And I'd have to say the granary was the point where I really cultivated the style of cuisine that I wanted to do. Tim was real big on not repeating menu items and doing a monthly transition, and we really had a good think tank there at that point. So I'd have to say the granary is my biggest inspiration from the food scene thus far. And, that thought process for creating and manipulating proteins and vegetables came from that kitchen.
Okay. Is that kind of what led you into, cause I introduced you as, you know, the founder of Southern Grit. You know, why don't you explain to people kind of the history of Southern Grit, what Southern Grit is and what you used to do.
Okay.
Because I think you'll see the tie-in with the barbecue world. Absolutely. Your beginnings.
Working as sous chef at the granary, it is a barbecue joint, but we were called modernist barbecue, where by night we would do elements that were all smoked and everything had smoke or was touched by live fire. And so we were taking what people thought was just a traditional Texas fare of barbecue and elevating it into the molecular world and doing composed plates, all with smoky elements, whether it was a Yukon Gold potato puree with smoke water, or smoking carrots and making it into carrot paper, or doing onion glass. We did a lot of really fun things with food that were just pushing it beyond what everybody just saw as an onion.
Mm-hmm.
Once I had my son, you know, 3 to 4 months after my son was born, I really found out the importance of family, and you've tied that in on one of your podcasts earlier. So I left the restaurant.
You get that, folks? Michael Grimes is a fan of My Fermented Life.
Absolutely, yeah. It's nice to listen to on a nightly drive, and it actually is it's fun because it's just like having a conversation with you. It's like we can't talk to you. kind of like a normal conversation with you. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. But, I went into the grocery realm. Okay. I started managing it at Whole Foods and started meeting purveyors of small businesses that we had their products on the shelf. And at that point, thought that we could create something where if we got purchasing orders, it would be kind of like a self-driven machine. You know, we just fill these orders and I'm home at night to cook dinner and be with the family. But we found out very quickly that that wasn't the case. And we had entered ourselves into, even though we had a great product.
So what product was that?
It was a bacon barbecue sauce. And we used a waste product of rendered bacon fat. Instead of vegetable oil to create our barbecue sauce.
Well, didn't you do something like butter? You had butter in it?
Yeah, dehydrated butter flake in our spice rub so that it would reconstitute with the rapid evaporation of moisture from proteins or vegetables and butter glaze the meats or vegetables that you were cooking. But we entered into a saturated market. And so even before we can get our foot to the starting line, we already kind of felt defeated.
And I think that's kind of my next question. I think people need out there, if you're another foodpreneur or an entrepreneur, period, Mike is a great example of what a lot of us have had to do, and that's called the pivot. Sometimes we enter into a business product or service that we think is going to be great, and then the market's just not there. We're just the time, the marketing, whatever's not there. So if you're smart and you want to stay in business, you have to pivot. So tell us about your pivot, because this is what blows me away.
The pivot came from what the customers were asking for, and we listened. We asked for us to do food barbecue with these samplings. So before it would just be cooking off kielbasa sausage and putting the barbecue sauce on it, and then people were like, "Well, let's taste your brisket or your pulled pork or your ribs that you used to do." And so slowly we just started incorporating the food back. And then we were getting asked just to do the food. And so we were thinking, maybe this is what's going to happen. And we go to a local coffee joint called Theory Coffee. And, pulp is in our warehouse. And we know the guys over at Estate. And so we found ourselves immersed into the coffee realm. And they had asked, what kind of culinary collaborations we could do with that. And I've been making beignets forever. And so I was like, well, how about I just pop up a stand like French Market style and hand roll and make beignets to order. And that story has led us to where we are now, just running full-fledged as a beignet stand and having sold-out markets and introducing new flavors and being able to create flavors from other vendors' products and to invest in their business and have their life be invested in ours. And it was a great way to link the community and make it a little bit smaller. And literally that dough is our money. It is.
I'm telling you, folks, you've never had a beignet until you've had Southern Grits beignets. These are not like your Cafe du Monde in New Orleans type beignets. These are a whole different level. If you're ever out here in South Texas and you can make your way to San Antonio for right now, or even we'll get into this later, maybe even in New Orleans here soon or in Louisiana. But if you ever make your way, you got to taste these beignets. They are just. They've redefined, in my opinion, what a beignet is. Now, what's really got me kind of why you're here, in my opinion, besides just being a foodpreneur, is that you actually do something a little different than a lot of other beignet people. I'm not asking for trade secrets, but you use fermentation in your process, don't you?
The time is the taste. The enzymes need to break down the proteins. It needs to produce a little bit of alcohol to get that extra gas for the leavening of it. But, when you allow the dough to rest in refrigeration and slowly ferment, it breaks down some of the proteins and enzymes that are in the flour. It allows it to develop bolder flavors. And just like this business, the good things have taken time. Mm-hmm. And as long as you let it rest and let it do its thing, slowly but surely, you're going to create something beautiful that's more flavorful and worth the while than something that you can crank out fast. So when we're out, that's unfortunately the downside of the market. When we're sold out, we're sold out, because this is a 2-day process to get us to where we're from mixing the dough to when we serve it.
No, that's different, right? I mean, like the big guys, what is it? Pretty much like a couple hour process.
Couple hours.
You're doing 2 days.
Yep. Mix, roll out, serve.
Tell you, man, there's so much zen in this fermentation about learning to be patient because the flavors are developed. It's, it's funny. I mean, I know I'm impatient. And so I'm in this world of being patient. Is this, does this world kind of fit your personality, or is it this a challenge for you too?
You know what? It was a slow your roll type of deal, and just let the process work and believe in the process and believe in the product. And when it does come out, you know, without fail every time, the end results are always the sweetest. No pun intended.
See, who knew there are so much life lessons in cooking? This is crazy.
Absolutely.
So tell us about what, you know, kind of what's your current thing? What's your biggest challenge that you're facing right now in business?
You know, it's scaling and finding people that believe in the product that we're doing, because it does take the time, and it is something that you need to commit to and do the right way every time. And it's just hard in this environment right now to find consistency. So finding people mm-hmm. that believe in our story, we want to make this business something that can support other families. We're not doing it to be mega millionaires. We're doing it to create a lifestyle that makes our family comfortable, and really it's the smiles that keep us going, because people are always happy.
Oh, amen.
It's nostalgic when people come to get a beignet. So we're really blessed to be in the business that when people are coming to seek our product, they're remembering a time and a place where they ate that, and it's bringing back fond memories. And so the vast majority of our guests are coming up with a smile on their face, and already that makes the payment that much better.
You know? If our customer satisfaction was a drug, that is one drug I could just take all day long.
Absolutely.
It is a high. I mean, it is. I mean, I agree with you from our perspective, nothing better than seeing that customer satisfied whether not so much the ego, just that praise that you just like, hey, we're doing something special, man. That's the stuff we just feed on.
Yeah. And you know what? The biggest compliments are like, folks from Louisiana or folks from France that have come through the market that have said this tastes better than home, or it reminds them of home, or just like my mom used to make, or this tastes better than what my mom used to make. Anything in relation to a family memory of something, of a place and time where they were happy, and then they're happy for that moment while they're eating the beignet, and maybe that transcends on through the rest of their day or week, or people saying, I'm looking forward to the weekend just to get a beignet. Again, we just can't, reiterate enough on how much customer satisfaction can propel and motivate your business. And
that's so true.
You know, we're blessed to get attention now, even in Louisiana, to put
that's our right. beignets to the test. That's right. Why don't you explain to that? Because you talked about how people are comparing it to Louisiana. So now that kind of brings up something I've heard. You want to share what's going on there?
Yeah, you know, there's many variations of beignets, and a lot of people, you know, they hold this professionalism because mm-hmm. it is the state donut in Louisiana. And they make this assumption that you're from Louisiana when you make beignets. And I'm actually from St. Louis, and actually got really exposed to beignets working with a French chef. But our beignets are different, and I love it, and it makes people happy, and I love them comparing it to Café du Monde, and then them trying it and them saying, you know, this exceeds our expectations. This is better than Café du Monde, or better than Café Beignet, or Morning Call, wherever they're accustomed to going to. But we got the attention of Beignet Fest, which is being held this year in October 6th in City Park, and we were extended an invitation. We expressed an interest, and we were extended an invitation, and we're going to put our money where our mouth is and go out to their home turf and be slanging beignets for 8 hours on October 6th in City Park.
A pretty big deal, isn't it?
Because it's huge. It's their 300th year celebration, too. So they've moved it to a larger venue. There is, at last I counted, over 30 vendors.
And how many in the past history they were ever had from beignet makers, you know, from Texas?
There's not been a beignet maker from Texas that's been invited out. We're neighbors, but they've not extended the invite. Uh-huh. And so they're calling us on over, and we're going to be bringing, you know, banana pudding or peanut butter and jelly beignets or Arturo inspired beignets. Just bringing a little bit of this Southern culture in Texas to Louisiana and just showing them how we do it.
Well, that's amazing. I can't wait to hear about that. Maybe we'll have to do a post, another podcast after that, just to see what it's like to bring kind of a Texas flair or your creative artistic flair to the beignet world right deep in the heart of Louisiana. Since I know, you know, Texas barbecue is definitely spreading around the country, it'd be kind of nice to, you know, see Texas go after that. So one thing we like to do in this podcast is besides just, you know, some business lessons, is sometimes we like some more takeaways, trying to bring value to your listeners as much as possible. So let me ask you this, if just for the casual person, you know, the foodie, the lover of food, or someone who's just like a kind of a, you know, at home cook, you know, what's some advice or some lessons that you can give them real quick?
One thing that I always tell, especially new chefs going into the industry, that, you know, when you're working from recipes, recipes aren't fact, they're guidelines. Same when you're cooking, just never say anything is fact. There are some things that are facts, like time and temperature, like you, potential for the Maillard effect or burning, and I'm getting too scientific, but enjoy the feeling of food. Don't necessarily work just in things that are definitive. If you believe that you can make something happen, try it and keep trying until it works out, and enjoy the process, enjoy the journey, and enjoy every bit of it along the way.
So true. The process is the reason to do it, right? It's so fun. So, you know, Mike, if people out there want to get a hold of you, how can they reach out to you on Southern Grid? I mean, go ahead and give me your credentials or how to reach out to you or follow you.
You know what? You can either, best bet actually is to get a hold of my wife, Elisa@southerngritflavor.com. We all have our strengths, and mine is not technology actually, but, or Mike@southerngritflavor.com, or you can find us at Southern Grit Flavor handle for, Instagram and Facebook. We're pretty active on that. We do a lot of updates, weekly flavors for beignets, what dinner club pop-ups we're doing, and little things in between and that happen in our life. So we just love our, you know, customer participation, sending in selfies of their smiles and powdered sugar faces. And, we just love that interaction. And that's actually what fuels us to keep doing this every day.
Well, we're still going to hit you up for figuring out how to come up with the kimchi beignet, but we'll do that. Let's one do of these. They will figure it out. So, but hey, Mike, it's just been an honor. I want to thank you so much for taking your time. You know, thank you again for joining us.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure. I love doing this. And these conversations that we have are meaningful, and they transcend into other things beyond the food realm. So it's a pleasure. Thank you. Yeah.
The other thing I love about Mike, I've never seen somebody drink so much Topo Chico in my life. So Topo Chico, you're an amazing thing to this guy. This is your number one fan.
I guess the bubbles go to my head.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you need to reach out to him and do some kind of collaborating beignets and Topo Chico. So anyway, thanks again, Mike. And also, you listeners, thanks again for tuning in. That wraps us up for another episode. I look forward to the next. We got a couple, kind of a couple series of interviews coming up. Next week, we're probably going to do a new beer company coming to town. So tune in for that. Another guy involved with fermentation. So kind of taking it out of the car and out to the streets, meeting some really cool people. So again, thank you. Enjoy. Have a great day.